Big show for you here today. We are officially post NFL draft, and it is time to do a little mock draft of our own. Nate Tice joins me for a dynasty rookie mock draft. We go through two rounds of a super flex rookie mock draft. You know who I'm taking, second overall. So you're gonna be dialed into that. But there's a ton of great stuff coming in here. Where do you take RJ Harvey? What's the right range for Caleb Johnson, Pittsburgh Steelers rookie running back? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, May 1st. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Back in the home studio, back in the little box here. Feels a little weird. Was not totally prepared to fire up the home station today, but joining me to talk a little ball is my good pal, Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, man?
Not much. We try to check the box of every time zone. You know, now we get back right to the East Coast. So, okay, now if we just could do a show where we're flying over Mountain and Central Time, then we're really doing it in the same week too. No, I'm doing great. It was great seeing you last weekend in LA, and good doing this too. Like you said, this feels like riding a bike a little bit, or feels like an old glove. Some simile, some metaphor, some idiom works here, but it does feel nice talking to you remotely again.
Yeah, I'm much more of a pleasant person remotely than in person. I completely agree with what you're saying there. No,
same with me in meetings, apparently.
we'll leave that little Easter egg here for the people. But no, it was great to be in LA last week. It was great to do draft coverage, totally electric. But now begins the post-draft phase here, both from an NFL perspective and a fantasy perspective. And it's funny because I'll say this, and I feel like comfortable saying it on the podcast, even if any of the bosses are listening. I kind of gave myself the day yesterday. You know, my wife had to push me. My wife had to push me to take, like, she's like, just if anything comes up, sure, do it. But otherwise, maybe give yourself a day. But now, like, I'm ready to talk through these rookies. I'm ready to start talking second year players here pretty soon, because I don't know if you agree with this, Nate, but I love the post-draft analysis almost more than the pre-draft analysis. But you feel like you kind of want to take that break after the draft because you just do so much. And certainly you and Charles were doing the Lord's work during the draft. I don't expect Charles shares this sentiment at all. I think he needs some time.
Oh no, I think he's off the grid.
I don't think we'll hear from him, you know, for months potentially. But no, I love talking about, as we were discussing before the show, like player and team fits. And like, now we have real concrete information. So what we're going to do today is we're going to apply some of that. We're going to do a 12 team, two rounder alternating picks here, super flex dynasty rookie mock draft. And Nate, while people know you as a true, you know, football guy, you worked for teams, your dad is obviously a legendary coach, you're a football hardo, you're also a little dynasty sicko as well. So I think this is going to be a natural fit for you.
I had frustrations with fantasy over the years, and I was able to play in like a small high school league throughout my time in the NFL, because you can't play for prizes, play for money. And then I was able to, once I got out of that, I was like, oh, I'm back into this. And playing season long leagues was scratching a little part of that itch. And then once I got into media, all of a sudden all my media friends started going, hey, want to join dynasty leagues? And there's been nothing more that's been aligned for my interests as far as fantasy wise, than dynasty leagues, as far as being able to like look at these guys and not only just the top round guys and interesting rookies, but maybe finding those hidden gems, finding a Puka Nacua in the late third round of a rookie draft, or finding some Jalen Waddle, Jalen Warren, like as after he breaks out during training camp and going like, hey, I'm going to pick you up as a little waiver wire stash. Like, that's a lot of fun, and actually ties into how I consume the game anyways, and knowing kind of X's and O's, quote unquote, regular football and fantasy are different realms. It's fun to have crossover and kind of get to use some of the work I do anyways for fantasy and have some fun and run a team and everything. So yeah, now I'm in five dynasty leagues. So that just shows you how interested I've gotten into dynasty startups and dynasty drafts.
And honestly, you know, full transparency, that's why I kind of wanted you to do the show with you, because that's how I like to play dynasty as well. I think we come at it from the same perspective, is building teams and liking players, and especially like actually caring about under the radar players. And yeah. on that, I'm going to get two things off my chest here about Dynasty before we get into this. And, you know, you can tell me I'm a jerk if I sound like a jerk, Nate, or people listening. That's totally fine. Number one. Yeah. Like, I like caring about the day three players. Okay. Nothing drives me crazier than when some Dynasty bro says like, well, hey, they get day three draft capital, you might as well just like stop caring. It's like, no. I got it. No. I got into Dynasty because I want to find the next Puka Nacua, even if that will be a completely fruitless exercise. Second thing, yeah, to me, and I'm going to sound like a sanctimonious jackass when I say this, but this is the fun part of playing Dynasty, not playing it like it's a damn stock trader or whatever, okay? Like,
right.
I didn't get in this to be a fight, like, well, this pick equals this capital, and this guy's got this value, this, that, the other. No. I just like talking about players, and I like talking about teams, so that's what we're going to be doing here today. So let's waste no more time now that I've got my feelings out of the way. Let's actually get into this. And Nate, since I am such a generous guy, I gave you the first pick here in this draft, so I'm sure you're going to blow everybody's mind with your crazy out of nowhere first overall pick in this Dynasty Superflex rookie draft. What do we got here?
Yeah, as I named one of those Dynasty teams, because we had to put names on it this year, we can just do Team Tice. I renamed it Junkie for Genty. Because everybody on my team got hurt, so I was like, "What's tank, baby?" I was in September. I was like, "This Ashton Genty guy looks pretty good." So Ashton Genty, number one pick, running backs, three down running backs, so hard to find. Anyways, guys that are actually controlling a backfield and are valid to or worthy of controlling a backfield like this, and has receiving ability and can stay on the field because he can pass protect. So there's going to be none of that early down or late down frustrations some young backs face. Ashton Genty, pick one. I think this is with a bullet as well.
I think that feels pretty good. I think that will be the unanimous number one overall pick. Yeah. I'm very excited about Genty, both from a Dynasty perspective, of course, but even in redraft this year, like I'm willing to start the conversation at running back five overall. So no surprises there. I think Genty is, again, the number one overall pick basically anywhere, even in a super flex, which is kind of rare. So, okay, so I've got the second overall pick. And again, this is super flex. I could consider Cam Ward here, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not scared to compete. Travis Hunter, wide receiver, Jacksonville Jaguars, is going to be the second overall pick here. Look, again, there's going to be a snap count concern. I've already had, you know, discussions with people about, hey, what if he plays 75% of the snaps? Like, is that enough? Like, you start kind of thinking about it from a playing time perspective and all of those things. I totally understand that there's some risk involved here, but man, he is, again, in a tier of his own in terms of the rest of the prospects. Like, Genty is a special player. Travis Hunter is a special player. I think there's a drop off to every other skill position guy, even of course, Cam Ward. So, I love his fit in this offense. I think Liam Cohen's going to do some really fun things with him. We've talked about the screen usage coming up for him. We've talked about just how dynamic this offense is going to feel between Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter. I think he could be... He could be one of the best receivers in the league, and I wouldn't be surprised. So, like, I just can't pass that up here at the second overall pick.
And, yeah, a couple of those dynasty leagues I'm in, I have a shot to end up with Hunter. I have picks 3 and 4 and a couple. So I've been trying to see how this will fall, because I think if I pick 3, it's kind of like a great spot to be in, or even pick 4 is a great spot to be in because decisions are made for you. Travis Hunter is one of those where it's like, no matter what, I think he's going to make in the league. I don't think that's a bold statement. I'm curious what the fantasy value ends up being. Yeah. Like, because like, that's the thing is right now they're saying receiver, receiver, receiver. How does it unfold? That's the risk with him. It's not the talent. It's the usage of Travis Hunter, which is such a fun discussion, interesting discussion. I'm sure no fantasy people will be upset about it by October all of a sudden he's playing mostly defense and only playing 10 snaps of offense and everyone's going mad about it. But he's so talented that's really become my MO really or way to go about these drafts is like, even with some of these team fits and everything, like, just take the guy that you like, because sometimes talent just wins out even if the situation isn't perfect and pristine. So yeah, talented player. I am kind of happy, though, because I was actually thinking I was going to be torn between a couple players here. I picked 3. I'm going to go, because I think sometimes in Superflex, quarterback is king. And even if sometimes that quarterback doesn't rush and have the rushing ability, maybe some of their high-end guys are, that's Cam Ward. pick three, now with the Titans, formerly Miami of Florida, formerly of Wazoo, formerly of Incarnate Word. Cam Ward, great thrower. I think, of course, he's going to be, even though they say he's competing with Will Levis, I think he is starting day one. That's why you take a guy number one overall, as opposed to the guy you benched several times last year in your first year with him, and Will Levis. Also, Will Levis, by the way, I don't know if anyone remembers this. He got prank called, too, on draft day.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what. There wasn't a big uproar about it, but there's big uproars about prank calls right now. But it wasn't a former it wasn't a defensive coach's son doing it, but he did get prank called as
big
well.
Big fines going around about prank calling. Woo! Now.
Woo!
Could you imagine if you Falcons. Ever cost your dad $100,000, by the way? I mean,
I've had a couple bar tabs on him, but not $100,000 worth. One time we won the Big Ten championship, and then, you know, I had an emergency family card that I never used. And then he was like, put it on the card. And nice. I was like, okay. And I was like, all right, let's have a good time. So, but that wasn't $100,000. That was maybe like $120 at a college bar. but no, I think Cam Ward is just a very good player, worthy of number one pick, and going to take him here as the kind of the QB of his own class. I think even if Jackson Dart went early too.
Yeah. I mean, I think these are the top three guys you should consider in Superflex. Now, I mean, it was a little tough for me at some point thinking between Hunter and Hampton, who, by the way, like I'll talk about him in a second, but I'm going to end up picking fourth here.
I figured you would.
I'm going to end up picking him fourth here. But like, to me, I just, you mentioned it there, like it's what can you live with? And Travis Hunter becomes a top, I don't know, let's say top 10 receiver in the league, I will never be able to live with myself. So like people ask me, I don't think it's Travis Hunter second overall with the bullet. Like if you think Hampton's really that guy and he's going to be the guy in a great ecosystem, totally go for it. But going back to Cam Ward here for a second, just you mentioned like obviously rushing quarterbacks are really the advantage, the guys, you know, from a fantasy perspective. What do you think of like Ward's ability as a rusher? Like, I don't think he's like a stone zero there or anything close to it, but you know, could he be like a Joe Burrow type of rushing quarterback? Cause he was a top fantasy quarterback a couple of years ago based on the fact that he like scooted in five rushing touchdowns.
He is going to be a hyper efficient runner, you know, picks up a lot of first downs. I'm actually trying to look up what kind of Mahomes's stats have been as a runner.
Because Mahomes is so weird just because they save him for like big games and big moments. And I mean, shoot, they don't even let him do the damn QB sneak, you know? So
it's no QB design runs. And Cam Ward's going to be like a simple design runner. Like he gets a couple in short yardage, a couple near the red zone. But like Mahomesian stat lines rushing wise is kind of what I envision with Cam Ward, that around 300 yards, maybe two touchdowns. That's kind of what I picture with Ward as his rushing line. Not comparing him to Mahomes. I think that comparison is a foolish one. But saying just his rushing ability reminds me of that as far as how he wins. Okay, pick up the first down, get down. One design run a game just to pick it up. He had a lot more design runs not at Miami. And then at Miami, they're like, no, you're a thrower. He also scrambles to throw. He does not scramble to run. So that's why some of the yardage isn't always going to get there. So I think that kind of stat line is kind of what I envision around 300 yards, maybe two, three touchdowns. They just kind of picks up in the flow of play as opposed to design run.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I mean, again, a guy like Baker Mayfield last year is about just shy of like 400 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And he's obviously thrown a lot of touchdowns over the years. But, you know, nevertheless, like that is something to just kind of that ballpark for him. He can still be that type of rusher. And as long as he's a really efficient passer, and I don't think we're going to end up taking any of these guys here, but I like some of the receiver moves that they made on day three to like, hey, let's, and even Xavier Restrepo, his guy is a UDFA. Like let's throw some darts at this and see if we can get some young hits. I do kind of like what they put around him. So, okay, I'll get to the fourth pick here, which is Amarian Hampton of the Los Angeles Chargers, which I mean, I think he's a great fit here. You know, this was the place that I wish cast him to pre-draft on the episode with Andy Behrens. And we talked about it a lot that I probably liked that first round pick maybe more than certainly Charles did on draft night.
I was in between you two.
Right. It was like, but it's almost like regardless of what you think about where they took him, he's such an awesome fit in this offense. Right. Like a massive gap breaking runner. He's going to hit explosive plays. Great stat from our production assistant here, Jonathan, 38 catches on 44 targets. Like, I do think the passing game ability for him is good. We talked about his pass blocking ability on Football 301, the full draft recap that we did on Sunday. Like, I think he could be a three down player. You might have to put up with some annoying, like, veteran deference with Najee Harris in September, but I would be absolutely floored if Hampton is not the 1A of that backfield by like November at the latest. Yeah. So again, this is a good offense. You know, they outkicked expectations last year. I think they can be even better this year. You're tied to a good quarterback. They're going to score a lot of points. He's the lead back. Really kind of like the math is that simple.
Yeah. And backs this class, this hopefully in this draft, you know, if you have your four picks, you can find two backs here. And which most drafts is like, maybe get this guy, maybe Tyrone Tracy turns into something, you know, but like this class, there's so many starter quality guys, which the NFL, I think, reflected how many guys got drafted a little later. Some of these guys went, which I actually think it could, you know, people listening to this, you can use to your advantage. I think this draft class with the running backs, and I know we're talking about Hampton here, but you can use 6th round running back, 7th round running back, 5th round running back, kind of use that draft capital to your advantage. Because most classes, those guys are up a grade or a round or two. So that's a 5th rounder in this class, a running back is a 4th rounder normally. A 6th rounder is a 4th, yada, yada, yada. Because it was just so deep in this class that there are guys to be found, especially if your league mates are all about draft capital originally spent. Like, you can really find some guys. Hampton, though, 1st round pick, so pretty easy. Pretty easy guy to figure out here. Everything you said, gap scheme-wise, explosive playability, can pass protect. I think he's already a better pass protector right now than Najee Harris is. Even if the guys have the same size, which is good for Hampton. Again, that doesn't mean he's going to be, oh, the vet's going to be out there on 3rd down because we don't trust the rookie. I'm sure there's going to be some stuff they have to teach him. But that's a good quality to have, a good baseline to have. I like the Hampton pick. It was just, I thought the Chargers should have done more later in the draft to help out their run game on top of Hampton. But I think that's where Charles got at, was like, you're going to have the same issues, even if we like some of the moves you made. But yeah, Hampton's a stud. I'll keep comparing him to Joe Mixon just because I think he has that 3-down ability and home run playability.
Yeah.
Right, next.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited. Yeah, go ahead to pick number 5.
Oh, sorry. I know. I just doubled down here. I'm going to go with a guy that, I don't want to say this because a couple of people in my league might listen to this, but a guy I'm probably going to take at number 3 in one of my classes, and that's Tetuaro McMillan for the Panthers. I just, my team makeup, this makes more sense. I don't need a quarterback. And I'm assuming Hunter will be gone there. I really like McMillan, as we talked about in the draft process. I really like this fit, actually. And it's one I kind of was, maybe McMillan, T-Mac would end up as a Panther, but then really, as I've now sat here, as you said, now we get to review how these guys fit in there. Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun, especially with Bryce Young, because Bryce Young's going to give him chances. Bryce Young loves throwing back shoulders, which also I think McMillan's going to thrive with. And then another synergy thing that I'm really, really excited about with these two is Bryce Young, like Cam Ward a little bit, likes to scramble to throw. You know, he likes to run around and find throws. We talked about this. What was shining example of McMillan's tape? All the scramble drills, and he's exceptional on them because he has good feel for space and he's a big body. And I was like, okay, here we go. There's some like stylistic overlap here. So that's got me a little bit more excited about this, but he's going to be the number one receiver there. They have auxiliary options too, which will help him out. I like the offensive line. I'm kind of like, let's go Panthers offense. Like, this is, I think this Panthers offense could be at least a top half unit, top 15, top 16 unit. Not going to say top 5 or anything, but really complete unit that I think McMillan's going to hit the ground running, and this offense is going to hit the ground running.
Yeah, I think this is why I liked the McMillan pick by them, is that, yeah, I mean, you can sit here and say, hey, defense. That defense stunk last year. But I think they looked at it as, we're closer to getting our offense to above average than our defense. And it, like, really, I think they were kind of just one player away. That's a lot to put on a rookie. I get it. Like, rookie receivers, I was thinking about this on my walk this morning, because I'm just a sick pup. And like, yeah, all right, great. Didn't work yesterday. Let's get back to work. Let's start charting the Bears offense. Like, just disgusting.
I saw that picture. Hey, you know what? I'm doing the 2026 draft, so I can't throw glass houses right now.
Yeah, okay. But that, like, what's worse, looking towards the bright future of the 2026 class or looking back at the 2024 Bears? But this is my lot you know, in life. So I, your year two receivers are up next on reception perception, and there's a year two receiver in that receiver room that I really care about. So that was the first one that I popped up on. But anyways, I was thinking about this morning. Just, we've just gotten so spoiled with rookie receivers, man. Like, we expect all of these guys to come in and immediately be Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase, or even like, you know, Malik Nabers, I think, was good last year, but I still don't even put him in that category of player. I think he just got, like, they built the whole offense out of, let's get the one guy who's a good player on our offense the ball in New York last year. Like, I just think we've gotten spoiled that when guys have perfectly normal rookie seasons, we almost view them as disappointments. So I say all that to say, I am putting a lot on McMillan's shoulders here by saying I think they were kind of one player away from being an above average offense. And it really is how well he fits as the X receiver. We talked about how he can bump everybody down to a more comfortable position, both from just a hierarchy, but also where they're going to line up in the receiver room. And also, just when they actually throw the ball to McMillan, I pointed this out this morning after at Dunk on Demand, who's a Panther, they follow the Panthers and everything, put out a 3-minute video of Bryce Young throwing digs and in-breakers. McMillan, in reception perception, 14.1% of his charted routes were a dig, and 82.5% success rate. Both were above the prospect average. That's really where I think his separation skills are best expressed. And even though Bryce Young's a smaller quarterback, I do think he kind of stands out from the small guys, Nate, that he actually does operate the middle of the field really well.
Yes. That's always been why I've been like, not totally out on him. I've always been, I'll be full disclaimer, I've always been a lower on Bryce Young guy than others, sure, especially after the rookie year. But I thought last year the growth was real and the comfort level, and you could see how he wins now. And it's not Kyler, it's not Russell Wilson. He's totally a different animal than those guys. It's really, God, it's almost Brock Purdy-ish. Mm. Like, you know, it's like he's kind of like a different beast than those guys, and how he wins and everything. And sorry, just to even bring back, like, this is their one guy away, and maybe I thought they're going defense. Jalen Walker was a guy at pick 8 that I always thought was maybe the guy they would go for. Albert Breer had a nice little breakdown, by the way. Turned out the entire league was in on Tetoro and McMillan, and everybody was just trying to throw stuff to get him to drop. Like, the Rams try to move up for him, which would have been, can you imagine this guy in the Rams offense? Oh my God.
Be pretty fun.
But I wanted Brock Bowers in that offense. I want this guy in that offense. But
someday we'll get somebody.
But he brought up a great point, and this is how you have to look at the draft. And this actually shows to how anyone listening, or when you're going through a dynasty draft, is you have to know what the teardrop is on all these positions. So the Panthers looked, they said, well, we can end up with Jalen Walker at 8, and then maybe Jalen Knoll in the 3rd round, maybe, you know, maybe I'm just throwing out the names I want to throw out. I'm just Jalen Royals. I'm trying to remember who else they were high on, but I remember Knoll being one of the guys that they brought up. Or we take the receiver now, and then we can get one of these edge rushers or defense alignment in the 2nd on day 2. And that's where they ended up with Skorton. So they said that the drop off wasn't as drastic at the edge as maybe the receiver drop off was from day 1 to day 2. And I like hearing how teams think that, because I would agree. That was one that I was like, yeah, that's a drop off that I agree with. So I just liked how they came to that result. And it's a couple of years in a row now that Panthers are doing a lot of good process that I'm kind of like, okay, all right, like, this is good. This is good for Panthers fans, and good for McMillan, and good for the whole setup.
Yeah, that's a good point. They've done some aggressive things, like they've traded up and down the board and stuff like that. Some of it hasn't worked out. The Jonathan Brooks pick certainly doesn't look like it's going to work out. But part of me was wondering, like, man, how did Dan Morgan get that GM job when he was in the front office with the previous GM? And I'm just like, well, maybe he was that one there advocating for all the right decisions and like good process. So he went to the owner and just like he went up on his boss there on Scott Fitterer. I mean, I guess because they have been much smarter, and like things have made more sense there since he has taken over as that assistant GM. But anyways, I'm glad you talked a lot. I'm glad I just talked a lot there, because speaking of teardrops, I think there's a teardrop right here after the 5th pick. I was sitting here thinking, as of course, listening intently to what Nate's great analysis is going on there, but I'm like, God, who am I about to pick here? Because I think there's a tier drop off from the receivers for sure. I think running backs are, it's tough here, because I think Caleb Johnson, in my opinion, could be the most productive back as a rookie. But I'm like, I'm really not.
This is rich.
This is rich for a guy that went in the 3rd round. Also could be like a early down banger only. like Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. Like, I do think it's too early for one of the tight ends. Like, I think I'm actually going to go Henderson here. I think I'm going to go Travion Henderson here at six. Like, again, and by the way, there's no quarterback here that we can obviously, I don't think we're in Jackson Dart zone yet, but, no. Yeah.
And you can't go Ibuka, who is receiver two, because that's a weird, messy situation for now. Yeah. I know it's kind of there's talent, but it's a muddy tier here.
Yeah. And I think this is great analysis, but it'll look much more obvious in December when we look back, like, oh, this was the guy. And my point in saying that actually is, hey, I think Travion Henderson could prove pretty early that he's deserving of this pick. He obviously went very early in the second round. There was a lot of conviction to take him there for the New England Patriots. I think a lot of other teams were upset that they took him. And, you know, they're a team that really, when you look at him, he's going to have such a clear usage case. He might never be the guy. Like, I think that his split with Ramondre Stevenson and is going to be discussed a lot. And I think Stevenson will still be relevant, but he's going to get those empty calorie touches from a fantasy perspective. It's going to be between the 20s. I don't think Stevenson's a great goal line back, and they're just going to throw the ball to Henderson so much that I think he will ultimately prove to be extremely valuable for fantasy in that realm.
I think he can be it's not going to be a huge touch load for him. Is that a word? But I do think that it's going to be a very productive one. And like you said, teams love this guy for a reason, because he's a coach's dream as far as like not just like his personality, but just how he plays, because he does all the little things. But usually when you hear coach's dream does all the little things at running back, all right, big plotter. Slow guy, you know, probably going to be on the Chargers backup running back or Texans backup running back or something like that. But no, he can take it to the house. And so I think he's going to be one of those boom busty type of running backs. You're going to have some frustrating weeks with him, but then you have the weeks where it's 14 touches for 140, and two touchdowns. Like, I think he's going to be a boom bust statistical back, but his every down or his real football value is always going to be good. It's just, sure. I think the fantasy is going to be spike weeks for him. So I actually, even looking at this group, I totally get why going here. I think it's a big team makeup thing, but like early on, I think this guy can be a running back two flex type, like, you know, that you are going to get some spike weeks out of. Yeah. I like Henderson there. I have no idea where I want to go with this direction. I might just go, I don't know if chalk is the word I want right here, but Quinshon Judkins going with Henderson's teammate, just because I think they're the yin and yang of each other. That's why they were great teammates. He's going to be the every down bruiser. I also think just this Browns team right now, they're going to be running the ball. We just talked about how many quarterbacks they have. Well, they realize they have that many quarterbacks. Do you think a team with five quarterbacks in April and May is going to go, we're going to throw the ball a thousand times?
We're planning to be very pass heavy.
Very pass heavy offense. Yeah, totally. No, so let's go with, I've brought this up a bunch, that the Browns offensive line is a ticking time bomb, but that's for the future. For this year, at the very least, should be good. It's going to be a run first team. And I think because of the draft capital they spent on him, this is their early down guy anyways. This is Stefanski. As long as he's there, they're going to be a run first team. So might as well get the running back that has health and has the size, can eat those touches. Even if I like the other guy that they took, Samson, I still like Judkins a lot. And maybe I'll try and get Samson later in the draft as well, just to make sure I have that backfield. But I just like Judkins. I think it's going to be more of a, he's going to get a lot of usage and quantity, not as going to be as quality based as Henderson's is, but I think Judkins, no matter what's going to get those touches on an offense that's going to give him a lot of touches.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's why I went with Henderson over Judkins, is I actually, like, give me the back, which, famous last words considering how that offense played last year, but give me the running back on the Patriots offense versus the Browns offense. Like, sometimes you just got to make that decision there. And like, I do think that, like, does Samson thing give you any hesitation? I mean, because I feel like they could be complementary to each other, but I also, it's not a strict, like, oh, this guy's our early down banger and this guy's our passing game back between these two.
Yeah, because Samson's a weird thing. If Samson were 15 pounds, if Samson was in Judkins' build, I think he'd be like running back one, just because, or not one, because Genty's in this class, but a guy that's up there. Because he runs between the tackles, he's got good vision and everything. Samson is god awful in pass protection. I will say that right off the bat, and lacks size. And so I think just being realistic, and really, I just bet on size with running backs, because I just think that's what's most conducive to long-term touches. While I think Samson is always going to end up being that and I like the player, or I did, Jerome Ford's role. Like, he's the two. He can take some touches, and in some games, if Judkins is not all the way there, he takes more touches, but they're valid ones. So that's how I envision anyways, and their play style. I wish both of them were separate because I liked both players, and now they're in the same backfield. So there is some backfield, I'm sorry. So there is some muddiness there.
Yeah, just slightly muddy, but I think that's – I still think this is the right area to take Judkins. I am going to go before our final pick before the break here. I'm going to go Emeka Egbuka, actually, at this slot. And I realize, like, obviously, year one, he's very much blocked. But I still –
it's dynasty.
But it's dynasty, right? And this is – like, we got to have some patience here. And by the way, we're always bad at going into things, reading situations. Almost always bad. And this is still a great player – in an offensive ecosystem that, yes, they're changing coordinators once again, but over the last 2 years, with Baker Mayfield at the helm, this has been a really, really good quality offensive ecosystem. So I'm just willing to bet on that and bet on the player. And he was my clear-cut receiver, too, and I think there was a drop to all these other guys, Matthew Golden included. So, again, just – by the way, like this player works really well with Baker Mayfield in terms of the routes that he wins on and like being that kind of bigger slot presence. I just think long term, you know, Chris Godwin's a guy who can play outside. He doesn't have to be a slot only guy. Emeka Egbuka is a guy who can play outside, doesn't have to be slot only. So I don't think this is strictly as like, oh man, he's blocked forever. I would be shocked if by year two he doesn't have a really, really big role here.
I'm with you. And this is what I've come back to. They took him in the top 20 for a reason.
Right.
You know. That's what I just keep coming back to. It's like a team doesn't, Jason White does a great job of this, but they didn't do that for no reason. And and even if the usage isn't crazy this year and he ends up with like a 600 yard year or whatever, long term, there's a reason they took him. Not only just because he's another coach's dream, but just his skill set is just really, really, really good. And I'm glad you brought up the inside outside versatility is because of that synergy. And who knows what happens with Godwin? Maybe they know that Godwin's, oh man, this is more of a wreck than we realize. Okay, let's just, you know, insulate ourselves from any damages there because in case we have an offensive drop off. So, again, draft the players you like. And I love Egbuka. He was my receiver too, clearly too, along with you. So I'm all for this. I almost took him the pick before because I like the player. And so I just trust that the situation will unfold because the player's talent is so good.
Yeah, Jason Light did say today, actually, on Wednesday as we're taping this, that the Emeka Egbuka pick had nothing to do with where Chris Godwin currently is in his rehab, but also said it allows us to not rush him back, basically. Yeah. And, you know, as much as I love some of the stuff that Liam Cohen did with the offense when the top two receivers were down, Evans and Godwin, they lost all those games, lost all four of those games that those guys weren't out there. And it's like,
it was a fun quirk. It wasn't winning football.
Exactly. Like, oh, nice. We ran the offense out of Kate Otten for like 3 weeks. Okay. Well, you still lost all those games. You survived. You didn't thrive.
Yeah.
This is an offense that wants to thrive. And Jalen McMillan is a guy that I think you and I are in lockstep on this is a three and like is not a guy who needs to be bumped up a peg. He needs to stay in that role to be best maximized. So, and that's just the way it is. Like, you take a receiver in the top 20, that guy's going to pass up your former third round pick. It is what it is. All right, we're going to take our first break. We come back, we will go through picks 9 to the fourth pick in the second round right after this. All right, we are back. Nate is over there for the YouTube folks, just squinting at the board here because I think yet again we're still in like a tough zone. By the way, if you're in your dynasty drafts and you're feeling a little weirdness from pick 6 to like the end of the first round, we're feeling it too. So I'm very curious to see where you go here, Nate, with the 9th pick in the first round.
I'm more comfortable in the second round than I am right here.
I know, yeah,
because all of them don't feel like I should be taking them here. Like all of them, all the players I'm considering the two tight ends, Tyler Warren and Colson Loveland. And I'm also, God. And I mean, I don't think Jackson Dart's not on my short list here, but I'm going to go with a guy that I'm keen on trying to get. And there's one league where I have the first pick of the second round. Cause we do comp picks. Yeah. But anyways, Caleb Johnson, this is where I'm taking him is right here. 9th pick. I feel like this should be the range for him, like 9 to 14. Maybe I'm just saying that because I picked 13. but there's easy way to sell this one. Caleb Johnson is a pristine zone runner with size and runs like a mini Derrick Henry. And he went to the former offense coordinator of Derrick Henry, who runs zone one, zone first, zone second, and zone third. It's a perfect stylistic fit for player and situation, or in scheme for the pro team. The situation is good. So I'm just going to take Johnson here. He was my running back three, but it was... Was he three? No, he was four, I actually think. Hmm. But he was still part of that tier. It was Genty, you know, Hampton, and then the rest of the guys, 3 to 11, were all kind of grouped together. I kept thinking Johnson wasn't perfect for everybody, but it was perfect for his own team. Goes to his own team. He's going to get plenty of touches. This is going to be a run-first team. Well, under Arthur Smith, it always is going to be. So Caleb Johnson here, because I just think he'll get that usage and it'll be a fun 3 years, or until Arthur Smith is fired.
Right. Which, by the way, could be at the end of this year.
Which might happen this year.
That's part of my worry here with Caleb Johnson, as much as, again, I'm going to be bullish on him this year. I'm going to rank him highly in fantasy. I'm going to want to draft him. There is some long-term risk because he was only a third-round pick. He is scheme-specific. So there's the risk if, okay, what if Arthur Smith does get canned at the end of the year? What if he just has a middling rookie year? They only used a third round pick on him. By the way, he's going to be splitting carries and touches overall with Jaylen Warren. That's a part of this. They brought him back this year, and he's a good player that I think they're pretty happy with. So, but however, that all that being said, for this year, if Caleb Johnson hits in year one, this pick could age very well because the Steelers, as I've said all throughout the offseason, second highest in percentage of zone runs. They were fourth in terms of carries per game overall. And they hammered the fact, Mike Tomlin in the press conference hammered the fact that there was a lot of Sunday runs on Caleb Johnson's tape at Iowa. And emphasis on the word a lot, because they talked about him as a guy that can handle a lot of carries, mm-hmm. and which makes me think like they're about to load that dude up in year one. So again, not a completely risk-free pick, but I do think a good one here where you took him.
This reminds me of someone had an amazing tweet about when Riley Leonard, like 400 mentions of Riley Leonard this spring.
Sure, of course.
After the Ohio State game, the first drive where he took like 12 carries and he's just getting slaughtered and just battered around. He gets a touchdown. Someone had a hilarious tweet that said, offense coordinator calls up Riley Leonard and says, "Hey, Riley, do you have any eligibility left?" Riley answers, "No." "Why?" Offense coordinator, "Just asking." That's how Caleb Johnson feels. "How long's your contract?" "4 years plus a team option." "Just asking. Just asking." Because I think there's going to be a high load frequency. Let's put some trail on those tires. And it's only a third round pick. This is not the Najee Harris first round pick. Let's put the trail on the tires. So, yeah, I'm all for this.
Yeah, Caleb Johnson was selected with the 83rd overall pick. So a little bit of a difference here. But this team did take Le'Veon Bell with the 48th overall pick several years. Second round in 2013. He gave him 18.8. rush attempts per game in his rookie season. So that's the season you're kind of hoping he has, even though Bell was not efficient that year. You're hoping he can just handle a lot of work in this in this particular offense. So, okay, 10th pick here in the first round. A lot of options to consider. You know, we've got the two tight ends. We've got Matthew Golden. You've got, you mentioned Jackson Dart. I do think we're in a comfortable Jackson Dart zone, you know, because he is a fantasy valuable quarterback. And I just feel like the Russ experience is going to last 4 weeks, and then Dart's going to be on the field. So I am at least considering him here, even if I'm not all that bullish on the Giants ecosystem, and I'm a little mixed on Dart overall. But I'm actually going to go with another running back here, and I'm going to take RJ Harvey here with the 10th pick. Yeah,
I wanted this one.
Again, I'll bring up the post-draft presser on this one. Sean Payton basically talked about how they arrived at RJ Harvey, which was, he knew they loved Genty. Everybody was in consensus there, just like every human being on planet Earth, but realized that was probably unrealistic for them to get to Ashton Genty there at the, you know, in the top 10. That was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So he's like basically went looking to fall in love with someone. And he said he could recount the day in which he watched every touch RJ Harvey had. And basically from then on, it was, okay, be quiet. Like, nobody talk about this. Nobody talk about this guy. So that's why they took him like a round ahead of consensus, basically. Yeah. They took him very early in the draft. RJ Harvey, you know, like when, but this is the thing, when Sean Payton finds a guy, and like, even if it's a guy that's not quite within normal, like size thresholds, whatever, he's gonna load that guy up with touches. Forced 211 missed tackles since 2022. Like, he is a missed tackle forcer. You've expressed some skepticism about Harvey as a player, but this is a great ecosystem. He should just get a ton of work here. So we'll see how high he can fly in terms of the ceiling, but I do think he's in line for a lot of work as a rookie on an offense that looks pretty good.
So, I mentioned before that I had 11 guys with first three-round grades. 3 through 11 were tiered similarly. RJ Harvey was number 11, 10 or 11 for me. But I still, this was the disconnect because Broncos fans just find anything to hate me on. Sure. But I have concerns with Harvey because of age. He's a converted quarterback. Some of the vision stuff, I thought his vision's just okay as opposed to good. But the thing is, I still had a top three round grade on him. Right. It was just I have to bring up blemishes and try to explain why maybe I prefer other guys than him. The fact that I think why Sean Payton likes him is he likes the running backs to be all three down guys. Mm-hmm. He wants those guys to be out there. He traditionally always has a split backfield, which is why it's no matter what with Harvey, I always have that in the back of my mind. Even if you love him, you don't like him. I think another blemish for me was that he's 24. And the track record of 24-year-old rookie running backs, ones that are drafted at 24, isn't great. It's just not. Like, but David Johnson was one of those. And RJ Harvey and Johnson, not similar players, but kind of similar narrative scouting, where David Johnson was a converted receiver, RJ Harvey a converted quarterback, not the biggest school guys. UCF is the Big 12 now, so maybe that's not fair. but Northern Iowa for David Johnson. But where I like Harvey, but I just think this usage and this ecosystem, no matter who the running back they took, I'm going to be bullish on. It was just one of those where it's like, oh, could have been someone else that was like maybe a little higher on. But I still like the player. I still think he has the size to take early down touches, and he has hands, and he can create some big plays as well. So I think that's why they kind of really liked him, because he does a lot well. There was just nothing for me that was a calling card for him, and I just didn't think anything was exceptional. But I like this pick because I was looking at him too, just this usage. We're keen on the Broncos offense, I think, as far as the offensive line, the run game and everything. Also, Harvey made me look this up. They are fine drafting older players as well. That is just something which I think Sean Payton just does not care for that. He's like, hey, I can coach this guy up. He can take it. Let's go. So that is something that he does not care about either.
I mean, dude, he took Pat Bryant in the third round. I actually like the fit in Sean Payton's offense, but he's basically like, he's going to get his guys. And I don't think we'll be talking about Pat Bryant here, but I like that pick a lot. I'm higher post-draft on Pat Bryant than I was pre-draft.
I'm higher post-draft than I was pre or during the draft. It's one of those as I've marinated on it, I'm like, okay, yeah, I get why this came to be a round earlier than I would have taken him, but like, I get why you ended up to this conclusion.
Yeah, with RJ Harvey being 24 years old, like taking him in the late first round, and I'm assuming like we're obviously this is just a two guy mock here, but like 10th pick, you're a contender. You should be. You should view these things in 3-year windows in Dynasty. Like, we're not looking at 1 year, but we're also not like, oh God, what's he going to be doing in 10 years? Like, 10 years.
Yeah.
Dude, who even knows if any of us are going to be alive in 10 years? I mean, shoot, try to win this thing in the next 3 years. I think RJ Harvey is going to help you do that. So, Nate, at the 11th pick in the first round, where are we going?
I think this is where I go Jackson Dart.
All right. Makes sense.
Just the quarterback appeal. Again, like you said, if you're picking right here, I'm picking pick 11, probably have a decent quarterback super flex situation. So also valid little dart throw for Dart here. Yeah. I wasn't even trying.
The puns
that
are going to be going.
But where some appeal with Dart is too is that he can run. And he is a good athlete, and that's the tools that I think it makes him interesting to work with. Again, I thought Dart should have been a third rounder, but that's how quarterbacks go. And Brian Daboll has already brought up some Josh Allen comparisons, which I think are crazy, but also how he's envisioning him, that if Dart's on the field, he's running, and they'll use him on design runs. And Dart's a good runner. Like, he has vision, and he's got good speed and good size, has to learn how to go down. But no, that's why I'm actually more bullish on Dart, maybe in fantasy terms than real life terms. Cause at least if I get a few years out of him where he's running around, make a couple big plays, he's got a decent receiver, Malik Nabers, and a good tight end I'm kind of bullish on, Theo Johnson. So I actually think he's a decent fantasy stash or a guy to have on my roster, especially if I have a couple other quarterbacks there.
Yeah, Daniel Jones was QB 9 in that 2022 Giants offense, even though I don't think any of us think that Daniel Jones is like a top 10 quarterback in the league.
Amazing.
Now, he had
yeah.
he had 700 yards and 7 touchdowns. I will take the under on both for Jackson Dart this year, but I still think they can put together an offense that mm-hmm. looks like that 2022 offense. We're also just dropping in Malik. Now, we're taking Saquon Barkley out of it, but we're dropping Malik Nabers into it. I think that actually looks pretty good from a Jackson Dart fantasy yeah. perspective. So 12th pick here for me. A couple different options here, three different options specifically that I'm considering, but I am ultimately going to go with Colson Loveland on this one. Nice. It's tough between him. As much as I don't like the Tyler Warren pick for real life, I do actually think from a fantasy standpoint, it's not too I think those guys are close from a fantasy standpoint, actually, just Tyler Warren and Colson Loveland. But I'm just going to trust the Ben Johnson ecosystem. I'm going to trust that he's going to be around. He's got a plan for this player, whereas I think everybody in Indianapolis could get cleared out after year one. And then the next coach is like, all right, what am I doing with Tyler Warren? You know, because I think he was a coach-specific type of player. And I think Shane Steichen's the right coach for him. What is Shane Steichen going to be as coach 12 months from now? I think that's a question worth asking. Whereas Colson Loveland, he's got Ben Johnson. He's got top 10 draft capital behind him. He's a damn good player too, man. Like, I think he could score a lot of touchdowns this year. Like Caleb Williams, some of his best throws were up the seam or over the middle mm-hmm. to Cole Kmet. And like, mm-hmm. now we're going to take Cole Kmet out of there. We're going to put Colson Loveland in there. I'm in on the Colson Loveland stuff. So it's tough between him, Warren, and the next receiver on my board here. But ultimately, I'm going to go with Colson Loveland and hope I can hit a home run at tight end.
I love it. I really like Loveland. He ended up being my tight end one. I wasn't shocked when he ended up getting drafted as the tight end one, just because everything you said. He could be a field stretcher. He's got real one-on-one game-wrecking ability where he actually can beat DBs and shows it. Again, it's not theory. It's not projection. Already shows in college, and I think he can easily do it in the NFL on top of having some blocking ability. So again, mm-hmm. it's all about snaps. It's all about how many snaps you can be on the field. And for a guy like Loveland, who, yeah, only had like, what, 500 receiving yards last year in college, it's like he's going to be such a better pro and more of a pass-heavy attack. And this type of offense with Ben Johnson knows how to use those tight ends. That's why that gets me even yeah. more excited about this. This was the other guy I was looking at, was Loveland or Dart. I kind of was torn between these two, but love Loveland. I actually like the fit. Very excited about the Bears offense. Oh my God, please get me to stop before before they fall apart.
Famous
fall
last apart words, but it's just, it really makes sense this year. And by the way, it seems like they could sign Nick Chubb any day now. That's like kind of a rumor, but I'm not sure where Nick Chubb is at this point. Like, and if DeAndre Swift is the lead back and they invested all this in pass catchers and they have two guys that, I don't know. I mean, Ben Johnson's press conference comments are on my radar about turning up the notch and effort for certain people. And I'll just leave it at that. But there's a lot of good pass catchers on this roster. They should throw the piss out of the ball this year, which I think is pretty exciting behind that offensive line. But all right, we are officially through the first round, Nate. Let's get into the second round here.
Yeah. Oh, my last little Loveland thing, Cole Kmet's on the roster, but like,
for now,
it's Loveland's. It's Loveland's room. I'll just say that. Maybe some of that effort stuff might have been at Kmet as well. Just a little dot there. Yeah. But no, I got the first pick of the second round, and I'm going to go receiver here. I'm going with Matthew Golden. It's weird going Packers receiver and figuring out who's going to break out of the room. I feel like you and I've talked about 12 times in the past year. I know it's a thorn in your side, but I think that there is a definitive role for him, or a defined role for him early on, so that at least he can be a tangible player this year as his role grows down the road. Like, because he's going to be the speed field opener type to help everybody else at. I think he has more talent than some of the other guys. Reed, we'll see. You know, I like Reed as well. Yeah. But as far as being an outside winner, he has a role. He's different than the other guys they have. So it's not just, oh, they get another receiver. He's a different flavor than what they have. So that's why I think he'll be on the field early and often. And I just think actually him and Love will have some synergy. That I actually think there's some long-term growth here. Obviously, you take a guy in the first round for hoping for that. But I do think him and Jordan Love will actually kind of pair up really well because of Love's propensity to chuck it. And I think Golden is kind of one of those receivers that thrives under a guy that chucks it, as opposed to maybe a nickel and dime type of guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's it right there. Matthew Golden's a ball winner. Like, he's not built like a ball winner, but he plays like a ball winner. And I've talked about it a lot. I had this whole conversation with Daniel Jeremiah on the show that his route running is best expressed when he's running deep in breakers, specifically against zone coverage. This offense loves to throw deep in breakers off play action. So I think the synergy is there between him and Matthew Golden. And yeah, look, I love Jaden Reed. And I value what you've shown in the NFL more than what I thought about you as a prospect. But just if we're weighing these two guys as prospects, like Matthew Golden is, to me, a couple tiers higher than what Jaden Reed was as a prospect. Yes. And I was higher than consensus on Reed at the time. So, like, if he eventually becomes the number one, even if he's not a true number one receiver, he's just the number one on this team. Like, that really doesn't matter to me. I actually think this is a great – I actually think this is a really good value. Like, I was thinking about Matthew Golden when I took – even when I took RJ Harvey, like several picks earlier, and certainly at my last pick there. So I'm with you in that. And again, I think this guy that I'm about to take here is the last guy in yet another tier, which is Tyler Warren. I think this is the right spot to take the risk on Tyler Warren because I just don't have a receiver here that I absolutely, like, I think is a slam dunk. I'm not super bullish on my next highest receiver. I think there's a tier from Buka and Golden down to, like, the next group of guys here. So I don't feel great about that. There's definitely no quarterback. I'm not drafting another quarterback the rest of the draft. I don't know about you. I won't be touching that position again.
So. There's maybe one, but
maybe one. No, and I think we know both know who it is that's worth the dart throw. But again, even running backs, like we're in a little bit of a sticky spot at that position too. So, all right. Yeah, we're going to go with Tyler Warren here. Like I said, kind of mixed about the fit and things like that, but he is certainly worth taking a shot on here, and that he could be a high volume accumulator at the tight end position.
Absolutely. No, that's Warren's role in the league. He's going to be a Hockenson. Like, I think Warren can be like a TJ Hockenson fantasy value. And there's some similarities in play style and everything as well. But I think that's what he can end up being, where a lot of receptions, a lot of yards, maybe not a ton of touchdowns. I'm off the top of my head. I don't remember if Hockenson's touchdowns are high. but that's just what it feels like as far as a player, where some of his touchdowns are going to be more yak-based, you know, where he runs it into the end zone as opposed to that true red zone guy. These are differences, but they can affect the touchdown total, where it's going to be a high reception in yards kind of guy, because I just think that's where his game is. So maybe more like a Hockenson type of tier of tight end, which is very, very good.
Yeah, Hockenson's touchdown totals from his second season to 2023, because he missed a bunch of time last year, 6, 4, 6, 5. So yeah, I think actually that's a pretty good range to what you're kind of talking about.
That's nice.
Here.
Yeah.
I'd love it if Tyler Warren could score 6 touchdowns this year, but I don't think it's going to happen.
No, not this year. It's one of those where it's like, I wish I could draft these guys, obviously, in November. Because I just want to see how the Colts room breaks out. And then once it breaks out, it'll all make sense. But right now, it's so hard to predict
the thing I will say with Warren, from a fantasy perspective, even though, again, I was skeptical of the pick and I don't love the fact that they've got another guy that they're not going to be able to get the football to. Everybody knows that. He's going to be on the field all the time. Like, basically, they took him. They basically took him so that they don't have to rotate at that position anymore, so they can just live in 11 personnel. Exactly. His snap count is going to be very, very, very high this year.
Nope, that's a great call. Absolutely a great call. Yeah. Yeah, he's a frequency guy. that's where you're just hoping that the touches go that way too. All right, I'm about to do a little bit of a reach here.
Okay.
Because, again, trusting my board, maybe not what the consensus is, also trusting team fit and situation, Kyle Williams.
I knew this is receiver. What you were going to do.
I have to.
I knew
I'm
it.
Just looking at the next tier of guys, and I'm like, well, also situation, this is like, I see a path and I just like the player a lot. And I like where he ended up. I think he couldn't have gone to a better quarterback than Drake May, and Drake May couldn't have gone a better quarterback for him. Drake is a big game hunter and he pushes the ball. Kyle Williams is going to thrive under that. And where it's a difference though, like where a guy like Trevor Lawrence and some other guys might thrive, or Bryce Young, they might thrive with a ball winner because they give him chances. Those guys go up and get it. May is kind of a guy that throws it out for his teammates, where he wants guys to run to it as opposed to, you know, back shoulder it. Kyle Williams, here we are. Like, run, baby, run. And I think he's a real football player. It's not just speed and, okay, whatever. It's speed that matches what he does on the field. He's competitive. I think realistically, he'll end up being more like a good 2. Which is how I've graded. I'm not saying he might end up being just the de facto 1 in this offense. But down the road, they'll have to get another guy. But I think no matter what, he's going to have a nice usage. great synergy with the quarterback, a situation that's clean for him early, and I think he'll have a nice career. So Kyle Williams here, I'm keen on getting him because I have a lot of picks in this kind of second round range that I think this is exactly where I would take him.
Yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy to be ahead of consensus on. Like my rankings, which I'm not going to reveal here because they are behind the paywall. They signal this as well. Like, hey, take Kyle Williams ahead of where you're going to see him elsewhere. So yes. I'm with you there. This is a big tier of receivers, and it's just kind of take your flavor and take the guys that you believe in and you have conviction on. And I have conviction on Kyle Williams. You have conviction on Kyle. I might even be a little higher than you on Williams, and just on who he is. Like when you're describing like the type of receiver Drake May wants, I can see like Kyle Williams doing it and like confidently catching the ball, immediately turning into a yak threat, and like boom, we're going here. So
think how many touch or targets Booty got last year.
Yeah,
Booty, who can barely run. Those are all Kyle Williams touches. Those are all those exact targets are going to Kyle Williams. That's why I'm excited about it.
And those like were mostly perimeter, like outside stuff. And I do think Kyle Williams could play outside, but he's going to run so many more like in break. See, I think about like the stuff he did with Josh Downs at UNC, and like I love Josh Downs, but like Kyle Williams I was higher on Downs than I was Williams, but I was really, really high on Downs. But Williams is a superior player with the ball in his hands than Josh Downs is. So I think there's a lot of fantasy value here.
And even looking at, and again, this is just where the boards are at right now. I'm just drawn to, I won't name their names because they're competitors, but one has the rookie dynasty rankings. Kyle Williams is 24th overall player. The other one has them as the 34th overall player. So just even saying like, I have this guy more as an early mid teens kind of guy. And that's, again, that's where I'm taking him. That pick 15. So yeah.
All right, next up for me here is going to be Luther Burden at this pick. Yeah. And look, I mean, he is definitely a boom bust. He was a boom bust pick in the NFL draft. He is a boom bust fantasy pick. That being said, Nate, and I think I talked about this on our draft show, that when I was trying to imagine the coaching staff and the wide receiver coach that Luther Burden should be paired up with, I didn't know it, but I was talking about Antoine Randle-El. I think that's so perfect for him. By the way, Antoine Randle-El also said, and I know he's hyping up his guy, his new guy, but he said that his guy in last year's draft class was actually Roma Dunze. So very excited about that as well. The coaching's just night and day different. It's crazy, especially because I've been watching this 2024 show offense for the Chicago. Like, this is going to be so, Bears fans are in for a treat. Even we'll see how it all works out. If you're a Bears fan and this doesn't work, like, just give up. I mean, you just got
to
give up, bro. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what you
even the
do.
Defensive coordinator was a good hire. Like, they're set up like so, like, and it's not just name. You know, Ben Johnson's going to get a lot of hype because people have been hearing about him for 2 years. Watching him doing these press tours, and again, this is just how I look at things. He's been so much more impressive than how everyone made it. Because the ones that were kind of left at the altar by him, Washington, other team, Jacksonville, other teams, they all kind of go, oh, he's a weirdo. Oh, you know, I don't know how he's going to handle media. Guess what? He's amazing at it.
Yeah.
And if that was your big blemish of how he was going to handle media, I know how he is as a coach because I've seen it in Detroit. Yeah, like you said, if this doesn't work, I don't know what to tell you guys, because this just looks good from the process of everything has made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And just the process of taking Luther Burden, you know, it wasn't something that I necessarily thought they'd do, like, oh, another pass catcher. I think you and I quietly, probably is not, I don't even know if it's on camera, but I think we kind of looked at each other like, they just can't help themselves when this pick happened, because they really can't. But like, this is a new room here. And I think Luther Burden could be a guy that if DJ Moore gets a little more into the program this year, and like Rome has that second year breakout and Loveland is who he is, like, he might not be a guy that pops in year one, but DJ Moore might not be around there forever, you know, and his ceiling comparison is actually DJ Moore is Luther Burden. So I'm very confident in the way they'll design things up for Burden, and that if he doesn't work here, he was not going to work anywhere, basically, is like the long and short of it. So mid second round rookie pick, I think, is the right range to take the risk on him.
Think so too. And you said the DJ Moore thing, it's perfect for him too, like, in how they can use him. They have two other receivers that can win on the outside, even if I want to do some power slot stuff. I think it's a, like you just laid it out, this is the best landing spot for him, even if I didn't think it was one that he would end up at. It's one of those where it's like, oh, after it happens, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is where Burns gonna excel.
Yeah. Just a quick stat here. Luther Burden was one of two SEC wide receivers with 30 plus broken tackles over the last 5 years. The other was Malik Nabers. And I've said, man, there's some Bud Light Malik Nabers like in his game. It's just maybe, it's more like maybe Natty Light Malik Nabers. But hey, you drink enough of them, you'll get where you need to go. And on that note, we're going to take our last break here. We come back. We'll go through a mid-second round to the end of the second round right after this. All right, we are back. We're in the middle of the second round here. Nate is pick 205. We'll try to, you know, we don't might go a little quicker on these. We'll see. These are okay. The fun players to talk about, though. But Nate, fifth pick, second round. Where are you going?
It gets, I mean, we already said it's kind of muddy and messy and everything. And I mean, the thing with the two Texans receivers is I don't know. Higgins and Noel, I don't know which one I want to take right here. I like Noel better.
I was going to say, I'm sure you're Higgins in the same earlier. Spot that's me. Yeah, which is hey, I liked Noel better, but they took Higgins earlier. So do you stand on your convictions or do you stand on Nick Caserio's convictions?
I know. So that's why I'm going to just avoid it for now.
Okay.
And I'm going to go back to tight end. I'm going to go Mason Taylor.
Nice.
Tight end for the Jets. Again, early usage. I think he's going to be a good pro. Do not think he has maybe that top 3-4 tight end upside. Who does? But I do think he is always going to be like a steady, steady tight end. Fields might not be the best fit for him, but guess what? Quarterbacks that panic, they throw it to the tight ends a lot. And I think Taylor is just a guy that comes down with the ball. He's just an efficient player. Hunter Henry has been I wouldn't say they actually play a lot alike, but that balanced kind of tight end, efficient tight end. That's kind of how I envision maybe Taylor. Is this a little rich? I don't know. This is kind of the range I view Taylor fantasy-wise as well. But I just think he's going to have a lot of snaps because he can just do a lot well. Goes to the Jets, who have no one else to play as well. So I like Taylor anyway, so I'm going with him here.
Yeah, that's the thing. You like the player, and you just look at the depth chart. Like, you know, this is always easier said than done with rookie tight ends, but he's got a clear runway to play a ton. Jeremy Ruckert, Stone Smart. Like, Stone Smart's a nice little role player, but come on. You know, Zach Kuntz. Like, not only is he, by the way, I don't think any of those guys are under contract next season, 2026. So, I mean, even the receiver room, like, they did nothing at wide receiver. Like, it's going to be Garrett Wilson. I mean, I guess Josh Reynolds? He's the coach's pet, you know? Like, he was with us on the last staff. He's here now.
Tyler Johnson, that's right.
That does make some sense. Yeah, of course, Tyler Johnson. It's been everywhere, bro. It ain't gonna be Malachi Corley, so why not Mason Taylor? There we go. All right, I'll go to my next pick here. And I mentioned, do I want to go with my convictions? Do I want to go with Nick Caserio's convictions? I am gonna go with my convictions, and I'm gonna take Jack Besh. Neither of the Texans receivers here.
I wanted you to make it easy for me, so I could just take the other one.
No. I mean, we'll see if you do that next. I don't know. We'll see where the board kind of lines up. But yeah, look, man. There are some day three running backs, that I think are worth considering here, but that's always a little risky. And like a second round receiver is just a much better investment. And I said this on our draft show, Nate, I didn't really conceive of the Raiders as a landing spot for him. But, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I like it. I'll invoke the Jordan Matthews comparison again. Like, Jack Besh is just a much better man beater than Jordan Matthews was. And yes, while he will live in the same area as Jacoby Myers and as Brock Bowers in terms of like working over the middle, none of them are really like perimeter go ball threats. One, Myers is under contract for one more year, and he was a previous staff addition, technically like two coaching staffs ago, because Antonio Pierce last year, and then he was signed by Josh McDaniels and the boys a year before that. And Myers, I don't think people realize this. Myers was an outside, he was only in the slot on 33% of his snaps last year, 33% of his routes. Like, he was mostly an outside receiver for the last staff. He's a good man beater. Like, he's not blocking Jack Besh as the power slot receiver, especially because Besh is a superior blocker and run after catch player. So, I think Besh will finish. I love Jacoby Myers, so I'm not going to say he's just going to completely usurp him right away, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's the second most productive pass catcher this year for the Raiders behind Brock Bowers. I really, really love the pick, and I think he's a guy who could play inside out with Myers in this offense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense with Chip Kelly. Like, that is the hybrid receiver, I guess, is like the best way I can describe him. And the fact that, because he's played so much kind of almost a wing tight end where he's like a true H-back. And guess who loves to use that? It's Chip Kelly. He used a guy at UCLA.
Kyle Phillips? His name?
Bobo. Jake Bobo.
Oh, Jake Bobo. That's Kyle Phillips.
That's exactly how he used Jake Bobo in college, is how I'm envisioning how he uses Jack Besh. And Besh, a better player. But just kind of that big receiver, can do some dirty work stuff, can create a lot on the yak. I think he's going to be in motion a ton. I like this fit. Again, it wasn't one I envisioned, but liked it a lot, kind of like as you kind of put as well. For the next pick, I'm kind of like, trust my board or trust the slot that they got drafted, because it's like, I understand why they took this guy. Screw it. I'm going to go with him. Trey Harris,
all right,
Chargers receiver. Thought he was overdrafted. I will say that to start, but I see the role, and I see a role early as he develops the rest of his game. As far as the de facto field stretcher and the guy that works maybe those intermediate over routes, the stuff that where he can get a runway and doesn't have to work on the branches and the breaks of his tree, which I think is something he'll develop. I'm a little worried because of who the receiver coach is in Los Angeles, Sanjay Lal, who is never, everyone keeps saying that he developed DK Metcalf, but I don't know about that. I really do think that I'm trusting more, even if I did think this was rich, the situation for him is good. And I think the role will be defined early on. And you're pairing a receiver with a guy that I think is a top six quarterback, talent-wise, and he's aggressive, and he showed signs of thriving in this offense. So give him another weapon. Think there'll be production here, even if I thought this was a little rich when they draft him. Again, I'm staying away from the Texans mess. I want to go one of those Texans receivers, but I'm staying away from that mess. So I'm going to go with Harris here.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the receiver coach and, you know, whether you give him credit for DK Metcalf or not, because I do think the ceiling for Trey Harris, like the ceiling of the straight line X receiver archetype is DK Metcalf. So I don't know. Marcus Brady obviously is the passing game coordinator there as well. He was with the Indianapolis Colts for a while. I think that was probably like when Alec Pierce was there too. He's also on this straight line receiver, receiver archetype. It is interesting, right? Yeah. So he was with 21 to 22. I think that Pierce was a 22 rookie, I believe. 22. So, again, these are the receivers that we're talking about here. The Trey Harris, like, he's going to fall somewhere along that straight line X receiver archetype. I think this was the appropriate range to draft Trey Harris. So I actually didn't think he was overdrafted. I was a little bit ahead of you on Trey Harris, but I'm with you that there's kind of some of the same concerns here, but this is the right time to throw this dart on Trey Harris. So we're playing chicken with these damn Texans receivers. I'll just go ahead and do it. And look, I liked Jalen Knoll better before the
draft.
Stick
with it.
So I'm going to stick with it here. I think it is very, very close. If you want to take Jaden Higgins and be a draft capital, you know, zealot, that's fine with me. Go for it. Do your thing. Again, just where I have them ranked and tiered and everything post-draft, it's much closer than it was pre-draft. And that is adjusting for the draft capital there. But nevertheless, Knoll, I do think, like, this team's going to play a lot of 11 personnel, I think. I think they wanted to kind of get to that last year, and I think the reason that they couldn't get to it was it just wasn't in Bobby Slowick's bag. But hiring Nick Cayley shows me they want to do that. The lack of investment at tight end and the overinvestment in wide receiver tells me that, number one, yeah, they do want to play three receiver sets, so I'm not too concerned about, oh, is Jalen Knoll going to be in two receiver sets? Blah, blah, blah. By the way, I think he could. I just think he could be in two receiver sets. That's possible. Also, secondly, I think they're going to mostly be an 11 personnel team because they don't have any like good tight ends besides Dalton Schultz, I guess. Like, so regardless, I just was higher on Knoll, so I will go his. I'll give him a slight bump here ahead of Jaden Higgins.
Trust your board. Trust your board. That's all you can do. Trust your board. I was higher on Knoll too. Knoll's in my top 50. Higgins was just outside of it. I think he's like player 60, so it wasn't crazy.
Same. But I did have like a, for me.
Yeah, but I had about a half tier difference between them. But I really like Knoll. I've said this throughout the past few months, but my comparison for him was Christian Kirk that could block, and Christian Kirk's on this roster. But I do think that Knoll is a better player than that. I actually think him and Stroud, once that pairing happened, I'm like, that makes so much sense. Yeah, just a very accurate quarterback to going to a guy that can get to the right spot all the time and has three-level ability and can take the field top off the defense. Him and If they just took Knoll, I'd be like, yep, that makes a lot of sense. They just went with Higgins too. And I'm like, okay, right, why not? Sure, why not? We'll just get them all. So I really like Knoll, like this pick. I'll just go with Higgins. Yeah. I'll just go with the other one. Because again, this is how I think they should go in the rookie drafts anyways. They should go right next to each other or yep. at least within the same four pick range, I think. So I'll just make it easy on both of us. Go with Jaden Higgins. Kind of complete this thought for us as well. We're in agreement. It's kind of funny that we envisioned Higgins maybe best as a power slot. I also think that him and Knoll being on the same team with Nico Collins, like I think all three of those guys are going to have great synergy together. Yeah. It was once they completed the set, I'm like, okay, this does make sense for what you guys are going for. But I'm going to go with Higgins too. This, it was kind of how I look at these two in fantasy terms as well. So I'll just make you made the decision for me.
Yeah, I think it's a great landing spot for Jaden Higgins. So like I'm much higher on him post draft than I was pre draft. I like the pick by Hugh. I mean, I would have taken Jalen Knoll ahead of Jaden Higgins, but they end up with both these guys. Wouldn't surprise me if Jalen Knoll ends up better, but I do think that Jaden Higgins is the right spot for him. And, I actually think he is like a much better version of Xavier Hutchinson, who also came from Iowa State, who is also right. on this roster, interestingly enough. But I think Casario had a comment about this in the post-draft presser, too, that like how much Xavier Hutchinson was a pro and ready to go right away. As a day three draft pick really made them like he wanted to invest in this receiver room and like these guys. So it's interesting. Sense. It's interesting there. So I think they got and they've tried to use Hutchinson as kind of a power slot, too. So I do think it's a good I think we'll see a lot of Higgins and Knoll both rotating in and out of the slot. There's going to be this offense is going to be a lot more dynamic from a motion perspective, I think, than it was last season for sure. So, all right. 10th pick here in the second round. I think, by the way, here's another teardrop. But I'm going to go with Basil Tuten here and is my next running back off the board. Kind of close between him and Cam Scadabo, but I just think Tuten has, I mean, with the Giants, like they have got Tyrann Tracy, and like I wouldn't be surprised if Tracy's the running back one and Scadabo's the running back two, whereas Tuten, I think, could be the running back never sees the field or could be the running back one. Like I think the variance here is probably higher on him, but I do think like, by the way, James Gladstone said like he's been bullish on this guy. He was talking about him because he was probably scouting him for the Rams and there's front office and he got to them so damn late to the Jags. So damn late. He's probably like halfway through all of his work, if not 75% through all of his work. He talked about him as a player. He brought up in the Jaguars interview for trying to get this job. So again, Tuten, really interesting player, explosive, probably is better on like zone concept runs, but I think Liam Cohen's going to run a little bit of everything. And when they do get to some of that gap stuff or they're pulling guys or whatever, he's so explosive, he can really hit those home runs. So I think he's a guy that does have a lot of variance, but it's worth taking that risk here late in the second round.
They're going to run it. Like they want to run it. Not they want to run it, but they are going to run it and they don't like the backs that they were bringing back. So that tells me this regime is like, oh yeah, Tuten all the way, even if it's a fourth rounder. Also has big playability too, but actually has way better vision than ETN ever had. And it's just a different, better than Tank Bigsby as well, or just a different type as well. But I obviously, when the regime goes, no, this is our guy, that guy's going to get the touches. and I do think that they are keen on always having a run being a part of the pass or part of the offensive attack. So Tuten was the guy I kind of had circled maybe for the next pick. I'm kind of torn with my last pick on a few at round two, pick 11. Jalen Milroe was one. If you need a dart throw quarterback and you got a good setup for it, that's one that maybe you can look at here. I think this is where his range starts. Dylan Sampson, mentioned him before. Depending on your team makeup, I think more that's a third round kind of guy to go for. Scadabo, you also mentioned as well. That's really the guy I was thinking along with the person I'm going to select. That's Jaden Blue.
Ooh,
Cowboys.
Okay. God.
Went day three.
I hate that you just made producer Colin happy, but good, continue.
I just saw that his note right here, so time's up great. I really like him, and I think that if he were bigger, famous last words, yeah, he would probably go higher. He has juice, but he has, as opposed to a small guy that has speed, a small speedy guy, he ran a sub 4.4. He's 195 pounds. Usually those guys bounce all their runs, bounce them. They run like Etienne, who I just mentioned. Etienne's bigger, obviously, but this style usually bounces runs. They're very inefficient, very frustrating. Fantasy people are going, why isn't he on the field all the time? he runs between the tackles. Blue does. He is more a comparable, a Diet Coke, Achane from the Dolphins. I mentioned this on the draft show, than maybe other smaller running backs, where he can do the real running back stuff, run between the tackles, has vision, sets up his blockers, runs with tempo. So he's not speed, speed, speed. And then, and okay, the other stuff is just, you know, collateral. I really think that this is a great situation for him behind this big offensive line of the Cowboys.
How are they going to see him? They're never going to see him.
Right. And then Javonte Williams is on the roster. Yeah, he's better than that. Miles Sanders is on the roster. He's better than that. Like, he's a better running back than those guys, even if he's smaller. So I just think the situation, also, the Texas bump in Dallas is real. So I also got to keep that. But with this offensive line, they're always going to run it. Dak wants to always have running be part of the offensive system. Like, he really does. I think Schottenheimer's there. Clayton Adams, we've talked about a little bit as well. That hire, they're going to have a good run game. And now they got a guy with juice. Yeah, I'm going to go with this one. Not a guy I maybe envisioned that I was taking before the draft process. Oh, yeah, I'm talking about this guy round two and fantasy drafts, but I think this is kind of his range. And for a guy that's on day three, like, the, I think you can get a starting quality back here, even if he's always going to have to be part of a shared backfield. I think he's going to be the primary guy over time.
Yeah, I like this. Look, it just, how is he not going to see the field? Even if it's fifth round pack, even if it's fifth round pick, how is he not going to see the field when we're talking about Javonte Williams and Miles Sanders? Maybe there's another move for them coming at some point, but as it stands right now, Jaden Blue certainly could outkick that day three draft capital. All right. Last pick here for the show. Last pick in the second round. Not going to go receiver because it's just like, there's an interesting tier here, but I think,
yeah,
I mean, you know, it's guys that were surprising third round picks like Tesla and Bryant. And then there's some guys that went on the third day, including one that I rank ahead of both of those players who, if you know, you know, this player, but I'm not going to go with any of them there. This is definitely an interesting spot for Milroe. Milroe is definitely in consideration here, but I'm ultimately going to go with Cam Scadabo here. You know, it, like, he can catch a lot of passes.
I think it's a sound play.
Yeah, I think it's a sound play, and he can catch a lot of passes in this offense, you know, because he's got that versatility. He's definitely not a pass blocker, but he is a good pass catcher. The Giants talked about that. And, you know, look, I just think it's going to be a straight-up camp competition between him and Tyrann Tracy. I think Tracy showed a lot his rookie year, and I'm going to give him the early lead in that competition, but I do think it's going to be closer than maybe it will be sort of portrayed in redraft ADP this summer. So I'll go Cam Scadabo. Don't have a lot of conviction of it between him and Jalen Milroe. Also Terrence Ferguson, I wouldn't hate it. But ultimately I'm just going to go with Cam here.
Yeah, I think this is the prudent play. Obviously they draft him early for a reason. Obviously they want a guy that can take hard touches. But like you said, he has real receiving ability. Like, him and James Conner are a lot alike as far as kind of maybe what they could potentially be an archetype. Conner is bigger, but, you know, still have good hands and that feel for screens and checkdowns and also making guys miss, like, even though they're a power back. So I like Scadabo. He was one of those guys that was in that running back 3 to running back 11 range for me. I was just curious the Giants took him because, like you said, I thought Tracy showed so much that taking a running back early-ish in this draft as opposed to maybe later didn't really, that wasn't what I was predicting for them, I should say. But like Scadabo, he's going to get touches. He deserves touches. He's going to get hard touches. He'll probably get short yardage touches, so he'll get some touchdowns out of it. So yeah, I'm all for this. Devin Neal is the other guy I would maybe look at running back wise, but taking a sixth rounder over, then you're really trusting your board.
Right. But I think it's also worth noting for Cam Scadabo too, like, to talk myself out of my own pick. Devin Singletary is still on this roster, who's like a coach's pet. With Brian Daboll, and I mean, the voice of Charles McDonald is going to be in my head all offseason about, really wish they'd done something about this offensive line. Really wish they had, like, Dart to Neighbors, interesting, you know, like, what's this running back split going to look like? It could all look pretty much like nothing because that offensive line is not very good. But this, Nate Tice, was a very good show. I appreciate you doing this with me, man. So close after our big week in LA. What are you working on? I mean, I know, well, you've got some stuff coming up. So
I do. I have a 2026 big board coming out. Probably by the time you hear this, I'm following it in about 2 hours. I got a couple more write-ups to do. But yeah, watch some guys. It was fun. I'm glad I took better, knowing I had this maybe in the pipeline. I took much better notes and I was prepared for this one as opposed to last year when I got it dropped on me. So be on the lookout for that for Yahoo. I'm very excited to unveil who some of my top guys are. There's a running back in the top 25.
There you go.
Jeremiah Love from Notre Dame. Receiver class is a lot of interesting day two type guys, but there's one in particular I really like, Devin Boston from the University of Washington. He is the one, he is my receiver one, which I'm pretty excited to unveil to everybody.
Interesting. Well, yeah, stacked day two receiver classes. That's my wheelhouse. Nothing more. That was the case this year, honestly, was a lot of those type of players.
And this is how fresh I am with these guys. I got his name wrong. Denzel Boston.
Boom. There you go.
From Washington. That's how fresh these guys. But it's great. It's great. My brain hasn't been fried yet. Now ask me in a year from now, next April, when I'm like, oh, yeah, Denzel Boston. Okay, yeah. I'm just fried talking about him for the 40th time. But very excited about it.
Appreciate you, Nate, for doing this. And I know then you're going on paternity leave pretty soon. So we had to get you on the show before that. So a well-deserved little time off, as I'm sure it's not going to be much time off at all for you. No. And congratulations, of course, to you and the family on that upcoming.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, of course. All right. That's going to do it for today's show. Shout out to Nate Tice. Shout out to all of you Dynasty Sickos for tuning in. Next time you hear from us, Dalton Del Don makes his return to the podcast next Tuesday as we tackle our biggest debates in Dynasty rookie rankings. Until then, we are out.